Initialize sequence now. What's up there, Sparky?
Blessed morning to you guys.
Blessed morning back at you, dog.
Captain Hawk.
Luke Kuechly, Dick Butkus, Matt Butkus are in our studio. First draft for you, Dick?
Yeah, basically.
You didn't go to the draft.
No, you didn't go anywhere. Because, you know, there was the war going on with the AFL. Like Sonny Warburton said, it was 20 minutes, you would have been a Jet because Namath's deal was hung up for a little bit, and they were going to trade their choice to Denver and just say, hey, you take somebody else, we're going to bring him to the big city.
So they hid you.
Harris didn't hide me. I committed the day before the draft.
Unbelievable. So the first conversation you have after becoming a Chicago Bear with George Halas, how did that go?
Took me right in and started showing film and telling me, you know, over and under is and all that, and I'm just guessing. I just played regular defense and ran around, made a bunch of tackles in college. Geez, I'm guessing wrong and everything. Jesus, this is a little bit more than just running around.
If a guy celebrated like that on me, I'd wait for the next series of downs and I'd do a little celebration of my own on him. And then after he woke up, if he did, I'd say, well, you want to dance some more, hot dog?
From the seventh floor of the Tribune Towers.
Boy, this has been tremendously tremendous.
In downtown Chicago.
Project Stone scores! Beauty!
Come on, sucker.
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Let's get it on.
It's the Cap'n Hosh.
Everyone has to do their job.
We're going
to
ball until we fall.
That's a shot and a beer.
Do your job.
That's the Hazleton way.
Let's begin now.
Yes!
Good morning. Welcome in. Cap'n Haw on the air, Comcast Sportsnet, WGN Plus, alongside David Haw, the lead columnist of the Tribune and a traveling man. I'm David Kaplan. Mike Jacobson, our executive producer. Matt Rooney, our associate producer. Pat Costell, our great director. Phenomenal weekend of sports.
Yeah.
So much going on, and now we've got the Bulls and Cavs tipping it off tonight.
Tonight, that's a big moment for the Bulls, an opportunity for them to finally not let LeBron James end their season. Three of the last five have come at the hands of LeBron James. They've ended that way. So that's a big chance tonight for the Bulls. Our attention was fixed on the Blackhawks this weekend. Two big victories since we were last on the air, Cap, on Friday. Friday night, late into the night, they win game one. And then last night, they take command of this series. They beat the Wild for the eighth straight time at the United Center. Eight straight.
They were really good last night.
And Patrick Kane basically did what Patrick Kane does. And the Hawks, I think, showed and reminded everybody they can win any way you need them to win. For the first 39 minutes and 40 seconds, actually, that was a game that wasn't necessarily going to be one you remember. The first period was pretty nondescript. It was a slog. You could come up with a lot of different ways to describe it, but it wasn't that memorable. Hawks had a 1-0 lead on a great play by Marian Hossa. Jonathan Toews had a shorthanded goal.
And a goal that Dubnyk wants back.
Oh, yeah, he'll want that one back. He'll want the last two games back, actually. For a guy who came in as the hottest goalie in the league, he certainly has looked very, in the words of Joel Quenneville, ordinary. Now, he didn't call him ordinary, but he likes that word. And Dubnyk has been pretty ordinary. And last night, I think that Patrick Kane brought the place alive with after taking a great pass from Duncan Keith, controlling the puck, and just firing shot past Dubnyk with 19.9 seconds left in the second period. And for the second game in a row in this series, a goal in the final minute before the second period ends is really the biggest difference in the game. On Friday night, it was Teuvo Teravainen, and last night it was what Teuvo Teravainen wants to be when he grows up, Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
And both goals were just killers for the Wild.
312-235-2525. So a lot this weekend.
Yep.
Watched the fight Saturday night at my brother's.
Yawn.
Wasn't a great fight.
Yeah. I'm glad I did not invest time or money.
I mean, the stars that were at that fight, do you realize that that's the biggest number of private planes that have ever been at McCarran Airport, and they ran out of room to park them from all the celebrities that were there? Oh. And I don't know, did you see any of it?
No. That's a lot of regret leaving town Sunday morning.
No, they all loved it. Loved it. I've been listening all morning on different things on satellite. They all said it was one of the great weekends they've ever had. Because Tom Brady said he, Gronk, Bob Kraft, they were all ringside. The show was unbelievable. When I see Mayweather, did you watch it, Mike? When I see Mayweather coming into the ring leading the charge. He's coming right behind him is the Burger King man. I know, I've seen it all. He had Justin Bieber. He had the Burger King guy. I mean, it was such a spectacle. So from that perspective, it was cool. But the fight itself just wasn't a great fight.
Yeah.
The derby was outstanding. Eddie did a phenomenal job on his
analysis. Yeah, we're going to talk to him at 9:40 about hockey. He was back last night doing the Hawks game. He's had a busy weekend, but he did a nice job on Saturday in his other role at NBC, kind of analyzing the derby. His pre-race interviews, you know, it was fun to see him in that setting.
I went by Joe's Bar, Joe's on Weed, on the way back from Wrigley doing pre, going on to do post to make a play. The streets are closed. There's thousands of people there at the Derby Park. It was unreal.
Yeah, it was a beautiful day on Saturday.
Oh, it
and
was
I think
gorgeous.
That you had the Derby, you had the fight, and also you had the draft outside at Grant Park. And I watched a bit of that. And before we get to how the Bears did, I felt like the whole spectacle of letting fans announce it. In theory, it was great. I don't know if dragging it out to that degree, it's hard to pull off every year. They had a great weather this weekend. It worked out well. Draft Town's closing up shop as they're still kind of taking it down now over in Grant Park. You can see it going on. I wouldn't be surprised if it's back here, Cap. I think that it went as so well and the reviews were as positive as they were. We haven't heard much of the negative side of it. People's lives were disruptive, etc. But I think that it would not shock me at all if we get an announcement at some point in the next couple months that the draft is returning to Chicago. And I don't know anything firsthand.
Yeah, the thing on the NFL Network this morning, I was listening coming in, they said that they loved it. The league thought it went great, but now other cities are saying we can do that, so let's rotate it. Don't go back to New York.
Yeah.
Let's rotate it. So they're talking about L.A. next year possibly.
Possibly.
So we'll see.
Green Bay, I think, wants a bite at the apple. A lot of these NFL cities, Denver's going to want it. I think because they saw what happened over this weekend. It was a three-day commercial for Chicago. And what great weather it was to have that commercial as the backdrop. You saw a city alive, and you saw a city really embrace the event. Okay, for as far as the Bears go, it's very difficult to evaluate a draft the day after or 2 days after or even in the same year.
Correct.
But you do feel like Ryan Pace was pretty consistent with what he said in terms of the best player available. That mantra sort of carried the day on Friday and on Saturday. When you look at every draft, you try to project how many starters did a team get. And the Bears ended up with six players. Mm-hmm. If half of them end up as starters, I think that it was a good draft. Can you project half of these guys being starters? I think you can. I think you can without being, kind of Pollyanna-ish. I think you can being realistic. Kevin White's a starter from day one. He's got to be. I think Eddie Goldman could be a guy who is a
in the mix.
He's a contributor, and he's a starter. I think if he wasn't a starter, you wouldn't pick him in the second round. And I think the third pick, Hronus Grasu. Am I doing that right? The Oregon offensive lineman. I'm close.
Yep.
We'll find out more about him as the days and weeks come upon us. But I think that he is a guy, started every game at a high-level program at Oregon, best friends with Kyle Long, a guy whose character is off the charts, picked in the third round, 71st overall. You don't draft centers very often, but you could project him as being a guy that's part of the offensive line core moving
Name
forward.
Name the last third-round center the Bears drafted.
That would be Olin Krutz.
Correct. Worked out pretty well.
I'm not ready to compare this guy to Olin Krutz
yet. I'm not
yet.
Saying that. Just
He hasn't cussed me out yet, so I don't know anything to compare him to. Not to say that he will. I hope that Hronus Grasu has a great, long, productive career. And by the end of it, I think we'll be able to pronounce his name correctly and spell it without looking.
Who was the kid I was reading over the weekend? Kid from Florida, drafted, I'm not trying to remember by who. He was 400 pounds, and then he got down to, he lost about 35 pounds. He got drafted, and they asked him why his weight got so big. He said, when you don't have any money, it's hard to eat healthy. You go to the University of Florida, where they got the greatest trading table in America.
I don't know who that was, but that is a lame excuse.
Horrible.
And plus, you have nutritionists on staff there that can tell you what to eat and how to eat. I thought you were referring to Théo Fabergé.
No. Nice name there as well.
This is going to be – Jeff Joniak was sitting there over the weekend like this. Oh, no. These names.
Loved it.
But Fabergé is a fabulous story. You know his background? He's a sixth-round pick from Texas Christian.
Yep. Who, he was out of football doing nothing, working, while his mom was on trial, who's now incarcerated.
Yeah, she's incarcerated. She's up for parole this year, I believe. She's a Gary native, Gary, Indiana. His dad was deported when he was 5 years old to Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
And he left TCU, went back to BYU, went to Utah, was working, sending checks back and forth. I mean, the amount
working
of
three jobs,
of real life experiences that this kid has endured and hardship is hard to relate to. Also, it makes you wonder what he can do once he is in a program, once he's surrounded and his with structure. He certainly had it at college, but his weight certainly has been a concern. He was listed like a 360-ish. Now he's at 340-ish. I don't know.
Big dudes.
Before or after lunch.
Yep.
Big so dudes. You get him into a program, you never know. But these are the kind of stories that I love in the draft. I know not everybody loves the draft. I like this part of the draft. You get to know these guys, where they come from, what they overcome, and how they might plug in to your team and on your roster. So that's, we'll talk about the draft if you want to talk about the draft. Adam Hoge at 10:25 will check in with us about everything.
Yeah, after
Bears
Friday
related.
Night, second round, I was like, hey, tell me who the Bears took.
You were done. No, let's face it, Cap. You were done with pick 9.
Pretty much.
Of the first round. You were
actually,
like checking
pick,
out. You're like,
pick,
okay.
Pick 13. Danny Shelton went 12. Hugged the commissioner.
Yeah.
Can't remember who went 13.
Danny Shelton. Nice. And then you're like, okay, click. Chris
done.
Bryant. Click. Solera Bat. Okay, click.
Done. I was watching
Tiger and Lindsey Vonn. Click. TMZ. Click.
Yeah, totally done with the draft after about pick 13. It's boring.
We're going to talk a little Cubs?
We'll talk Cubs and White Sox.
White Sox, yes.
Ron Renicki out in Milwaukee. Does that ramp up the heat on other managers struggling like Robin Ventura?
Well,
we'll ask that question.
The heat would be there anyway, wouldn't it, Cap? At this point, you have to start to wonder why this team consistently does not play defense, does not look focused. And in so many struggles. I mean, this is
swept by Minnesota.
A team that just seems to be in the midst of a malaise. And
brutal.
You have to wonder why.
Brutal. All right, we'll take time out. We'll get to all that. Blackhawks win. They're up to nothing. We'll get to your calls. 312-235-2525. Cap and Haw, be right back.
It's Cap and Haw.
Hossa steals the puck, sure-handed. Down the left wing, wild zone. Put it in front, Tate shoots. He scores! A shorthanded goal for Jonathan Tate! Keek with a pass now to Kane over the wild line. He shoots, he scores! Patrick Kane from the right circle! Irvine and intercepts, got it to Sharp, breaks over the wild line, left circle, shoots, he scores! Kane's got the puck over the wild line and shoots, he scores! An empty net goal for Patrick Kane, his second goal of the night!
Best game all the way around. I thought we had real good pace and energy right off the outset, and good pace to our game, defensively solid. All lines were consistent. Had a lot of offensive zone time, puck possession. Played the right way.
There's Coach Q after some of the highlights, courtesy WGN Radio. Blackhawks, a 2-0 series lead over the Minnesota Wild.
Kind of lows
Cap'n Haw continues.
Into a sense of, I don't know, a hockey sort of trance because you're watching that game and you're realizing after a while, boy, this is a tighter game. There's not a whole lot of action. And then the Hawks take over and the Stars were out on Sunday night in Chicago. You had Taze, Kane, and Sharp score all the goals. And Duncan Keith with the pass of the night. And Corey Crawford came up big when he needed to. The Stars were certainly out. But you get into that hockey trance, Cap, watching that, and you don't realize until it's over, and really until you hear Joe Quenneville sort of put his stamp of approval on it. That was the best the Hawks have played. This was and I love getting
got a little mucky. He liked that.
He liked it. The uglier the better. The uglier the more beautiful it looked to his hockey eye. And beauty's in the eye of the beholder. But he liked it, and I think it was because it was a little bit more, as they say, there was a greasy goal involved. There was it was more about effort than elegance at times. And they showed, as I wrote this morning, I think that they showed and reminded people they can grind it out as well as they can glide. And that is a dangerous combination. And I think that the Wild has to be returning to Minnesota thinking, what do we have to do to beat this team? Their best players have not been their best players.
No.
And they have not.
Dubnyk hasn't been the immovable rock that you thought he'd be. He's been good, but not. He's had his moments where he went, really?
Yes, really. He's had a lot of those. He's not been the best goaltender in this series. Suter's not been good either. He's had two games in a row.
Well, the shorthanded goal, that's just a mistake he can't make.
And they've had a couple other. Vanek's been really shaky. And they've had guys who have not risen to the occasion. And at this point, what does it become psychological, Cap? I mean, this is a different team at the XL Energy Center. And anyone who has not seen a game there, I encourage it to put it on your hockey bucket list.
And you will
list.
Be there.
Yes.
So you're Cleveland tonight.
Yes.
Here to do the show with me tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Minnesota tomorrow night. Back to do the show with me Wednesday.
You'd be amazed at how much more economical that is to do it that way. I know it sounds a bit crazy, but the way the airlines are gouging people these days, it actually is more cost efficient to go there and back. Now, I'm not going to be in Cleveland for that long. But that's not a bad thing, is it?
No.
Okay. So, yeah, we'll be there tonight for the Bulls-Cavs. Looking forward to that because, as I wrote yesterday, that's what people have been waiting for. And this is a now-or-never moment for the Bulls. We're hopping around topics, but I think it's one of those kind of weeks. This is a now-or-never moment for the Bulls beating the Cavs and LeBron James.
8 days off for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
They need it, though. That's a new team without Kevin Love. Two games without J.R. Smith. Seize the day. Chicago Bulls.
Got to steal one of the two, if not both.
You've got to get one of the two because you have an opportunity here to unseat the Cavs before you dismantle your team. If the Bulls go down to the Cavs in this series, Cap, what's the future of the Bulls hold? Do you know? Are you sure? No. You really can't say that you are. You don't know about your head coach. You don't know about Joakim Noah. You have a good feeling about Derrick Rose, but what do we ever really know about Derrick Rose when it comes to his health? Pau Gasol's not getting any younger. The two guys that you can predict the most about, Jimmy Butler and Nikola Mirotic. Beyond that, if you go out to the Cavs in 2 weeks, suddenly there's a lot of uncertainty that looms. Meanwhile, in Cleveland, LeBron James is just getting settled in, getting resettled. He's back. He's not going anywhere. That window is wide open. I say for the next 5 years, championship window in Cleveland, they may not have it together this year because Love is hurt.
Well, that can have Love next year, it doesn't sound like.
No.
Sounds like he doesn't want to be there.
I beg to differ. There's a report in the Cleveland paper yesterday, the Plain Dealer, that they're going to offer him a max deal, and they feel pretty good about his chances. I'm just saying, if they get him long-term, max contract, Kyrie Irving, LeBron.
A lot of talent. Mozgov.
They start to get more kind of build around them, get used to playing together. You don't want this to linger. You want to take advantage now because I think you can win now. As flawed as the Bulls looked at times against the Bucks, they reminded us in the closeout game just how good they can be when they play together, they play hard, and they play smart. I said Bulls in seven. Because I think that they're going to realize the urgency here. And it wouldn't shock me at all if they get it together. But if they don't win now, I can't predict when they're going to be back at this stage to have this kind of opportunity.
Yeah, it's the best of four. So it's 3-2.
First of four.
They've got to go through a bit of a rebuild if it doesn't happen here pretty quick.
There's so much.
A lot of veteran players, a lot of guys who are in declining health.
There's so much in the Bulls' favor right now, really. If you look at it, you take a step back, and if you're the Bulls, this is the way you've got to sell it to them because it's defensible. You can beat Cleveland. They don't have Kevin Love.
If you beat Cleveland, you can win the title.
And you can get by the Hawks or the Wizards.
I watched the Wizards yesterday.
They look good, though.
I'm not convinced they
I'm not either.
As easy as people
I'm
think.
Not either because they're a good team, and they remind you with Paul Pierce of what happened last year in the first round. But you've got to feel good about your chances, though, if you're the Bulls, right? To beat, if you're playing the Wizards, you have home court advantage if you get that far. I don't know. There's a lot.
Last time those two teams were in a playoff series, it didn't go well.
But there's a lot to like is the point. So you're the Blackhawks, and you're in command. You're the Bulls, and you have an opportunity. This is going to be potentially a very fun month in Chicago.
It you has know that makings. I told you last September, I was listening to a tape of something we did, that the Hawks and the Bulls would both be in their respective finals. I didn't say they'd
what
win
was my reaction
titles.
Then?
Slow down. What did you call me? Slow down there, pal. We got a long way to go.
So did you like listen to old shows on your way down?
I do all the time. I have the podcasts.
So you listen to like September shows?
I listen to whatever.
I listen to country music when I'm kind of driving or whatever. You listen to Cap'n Hall from September.
I do. 9 a.m. hour sponsored by the great people at Apt Electronics in Glenview. Check them out on the web, abt.com. Ask for our buddy Steve Shapiro. 312-235-2525. By the way, all-time record for pay-per-view buys. It just came across on Twitter. Over 3 million people bought. 3 million households bought the fight.
Apparently a lot more than they expected because they delayed the fight, didn't they?
Yeah, because they had some technical glitches.
Oh,
they were getting
goodness.
Overwhelmed.
Wow.
So, crazy. 312-235-2525. Be right back.
Now, more Cap'n Haw on Comcast Sportsnet and WGN+.
Now he throws it away, and now he's going to score. Nobody is covering the plate because Gio had the range wide of the plate. Jennings had to go get the ball. There was nobody to cover the plate, and this continues to be one that everybody would like to forget.
Well, there's nothing you can say to describe it, except it's just almost unbelievable. See this at the major league level.
Oh, I don't know. Jesus.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox! Let's go, 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 White
Rough weekend
Sox.
For the White Sox. Rough. Swept away in the Twin Cities. Now they get a day off, and tomorrow the Tigers come in.
Yeah, it just gets worse.
Jeez.
Not only, Cap, did they get swept, but they've lost five in a row now. And in those games, they're outscored 39-10. They're not even competitive. Defensively, they're a mess. Hawk and Stoney sound like they're at their wits' end. It's May 4th. And I remember writing this the first weekend of the season about a month ago when they started out. What, 0-4 did they start out?
Yep.
Or with the 0-4?
0-4.
Yeah. And that Sunday paper writing about, okay, you know, is not to overreact or panic to an 0-4 start. But given the way this team spent in the offseason, given the expectation level that was as high as any before any season since probably 2006-ish, there's going to be an understanding amongst Sox fans that there's more expected out of the manager. And if things don't go well, Robin Ventura is going to feel the heat and probably should. That's appropriate.
No question.
You can't fire everybody. But since that glorious 2012, it's been a very long haul for the White Sox.
I retweeted John Paul Morosi from Fox.
Great job.
The White Sox have the second worst record in Major League Baseball since the start of 2013, ahead of only the now first place Houston Astros.
Think about that for a second. I didn't realize that till I saw that tweet. Since that 2012 season when they were in first place for much of the summer, and then they kind of blew it down the stretch, and we celebrated, rightly so, that Robin Ventura had done a nice job of steadying the ship, Cap. And what was the biggest – what was the best thing about Robin Ventura in the summer of 2012? What was he praised for doing as much as anything?
Being the steady hand, quiet, not the show, not Ozzy?
Not Ozzy. He was the anti-Ozzy. 3 years later, that's almost been the primary thing that you can say about him, is that he has been, you know, the same guy. And I think that he deserves a lot of credit and respect for being able to be that steady. That's what his most admirable trait is. But it's not working right now.
Okay,
something's
so how
working.
Long do you let it go?
Well, I think traditionally, Cap, correct me if I'm wrong, but the baseball milestone markers are
40 games.
Yeah, 40 games, Memorial Day-ish.
Andy McPhail always said 40 games, you could pretty much tell what type of team you're going to have.
And that's right around Memorial Day. That's right around the end of May. I think we're a couple weeks away from that moment. I think the next couple weeks are very critical to Robin Ventura. I believe that they have to show some signs of life. I believe they have to show some progress fundamentally That's the thing that's confounding.
They're seven games out already.
Forget the standings for a second. Forget the standings because sometimes those things take care of themselves. But I know what you're saying. But forget about that because they don't even look like they're capable of
competing.
Competing and being sound and solid and crisp defensively and being able to do the right things with runners on scoring position. They're not hitting home runs. They're not hitting at all. They're starting pitching, Cap. The strength of this team was in their starting rotation. When Samardzija and Sale get rocked back-to-back, it jars the team's confidence.
But that can happen. John Danks just looks awful. Well, when do you get Rodon in
last
this thing?
Night, okay, yesterday was a bad – he's 1-3, lasted 2 1/3, gave up 7 runs. That was awful. Before that, he had 2 quality starts. I know what you're saying. Noesi hasn't been good either. Rodon's got to get in your rotation.
Quintana hasn't been good.
Quintana's not been good at all. They have been a mess as a starting rotation, and that is supposed to be your strength. The South Side is restless right now. There's no question the fans want a change. I think that you hear the explanation, the loyalty factor to Robin Ventura from Jerry Reinsdorf. Here's the thing to consider, Cap, in a couple weeks. I just said how, and you agreed, a couple weeks Robin has, right? A couple weeks is probably the time where you have to decide.
I would say he's got 30 days.
Okay. The next 3 weeks or so, you could be facing the Jerry Reinsdorf teams in town. A lot of upheaval. Let me ask you this.
That's a great
way to look at it. That Tom Thibodeau's uncertainty, let's say, you know, if we're speculating, and that's all this is, if the Bulls are facing a, you know, change with Tom Thibodeau, and there's an Orlando paper that's writing, in the Orlando paper over the weekend, they're writing about the Magic waiting for Tom Thibodeau to find out what happens with him. So that is real. Okay, that situation is real. That's going to come to a head at some point. Does that uncertainty that looms with the Bulls with Tom Thibodeau and Jerry Reinsdorf, because everyone says, and I wrote it again, until he intervenes, we don't know if this is, you know, the finality or not. Does Jerry Reinsdorf's involvement with Tom Thibodeau's situation affect his involvement with Robin Ventura?
We got to take care of one coaching situation. I'm not messing with the other.
I don't know that, but it's.
But he lets his GMs run things.
Yes and no. What did I just say, though? What did you agree with? With the GMs, with Gar Forman as the Bulls general manager and John Paxson and Tom Thibodeau, we have been consistent saying, well, maybe Jerry Reinsdorf should intervene here. Get everybody coming. He's going to be involved. Do you think he's not going to be involved?
Maybe he already has been. Everyone keeps saying, okay, Jerry's got to get involved. Maybe Jerry's on the side of Paxson Gar.
Maybe so. How about the Sox situation? What's the number one reason people say no, Robin won't get fired?
Loyalty from Jerry.
Yeah. Well, he's involved. I know you say that he lets his general managers do their job, but really, does he? I think he does.
He does.
I think he does. But
he let Hawk fire Tony La Russa for crying out loud.
Stop going back to Tony La Russa. That was so long ago. Robin Ventura is not Tony La Russa. But we keep saying that, and I understand that, and I respect that. He does let the general managers do their jobs. So why do we keep coming back to the loyalty factor? Because Reinsdorf is involved, and he should be. It's his team. It's his organization. It'd be naive, I think, to think that he's not going to be involved in the future decision on Robin Ventura. It'd be just as naive to think that he's not going to be as involved with what happens with Tom Thibodeau.
Well, I think he'll be involved in these decisions.
Where do these two trains
I don't know if
meet?
They affect each other.
I don't know. Maybe they don't. Think of yourself. If you ran two businesses, you basically run two businesses. You run this show. Cap and Haw, say we have this. And you're in charge of everything that happens with Cap and Haw.
Okay.
Well, that's a reach. And then you have Comcast, mm-hmm. You know, Cap Sportsnet.
Mm-hmm.
Comcap Sportsnet, as I like to call
funny
it.
Guy.
And you've got two really big decisions looming.
Mm-hmm.
And you have people who run each respective entity. Are you not going to be involved in the future of
– Yeah.
When both of the futures are kind of – these decisions have to be made about the same time?
Yeah, but if I have people that are running those two entities for me and they come to me and go, hey, man, we think we got to do this. Okay, tell me why. We have our meeting. Okay, it's your call. I understand your rationale. Clear, well thought out. Go for it. Let's move on to the next one. What do you want to do? I want to change basketball coaches. Tell me why. Done. Go ahead.
You make it sound really easy.
I think that's how Jerry treats it.
I don't know.
He's heavily involved. He lets his guys do their job, and if they hang themselves, good luck to him.
Wasn't he pretty involved in the coaching searches for?
I think he wants to sign off. But I believe Jerry, if Pack says I'm going to hire David Haw, tell me why. I want to meet with him. Why is he your guy? And if you make a compelling case, he lets you hire who you want.
The hiring, yes. The firing, both situations are complicated at best. At worst, dysfunctional, right? If you're the chairman of each team, you have a complicated personnel move that you're going to make. If you fire or part company with Tom Thibodeau, that's messy. That's messy. You got to handle this correctly. And do you want it to happen? Like you said, maybe he's already signed off. At the very least, Cap, it's pretty compelling theater to have one guy involved with two. Both of his teams are going to be facing potential changes in leadership over the next month.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Now, maybe the White Sox start winning tomorrow. They suddenly stun everybody, and they take the series from Detroit, and then whoever the heck's coming up next. Well, I think the Reds are in town. They play well there. So,
well, that sounds like something Hawk might say. I mean, right now he's speechless.
Yes!
Pretty hard to be a play-by-play guy and to be searching for the right words to describe what you're watching. I feel for those guys. Because, you know, yesterday flipping around before the Hawks game on the treadmill, whatever, you know, you could hear the frustration in their voices. And
I'll be with Stoney tonight.
Yes, you will. You're going to be introducing him. Congratulations to Steve Stone.
Steve Stone will win the Ring Lardner Award for broadcast journalism. Fred Mitchell.
Excellent.
For
print.
Writing, for print.
Congratulations to Fred Mitchell, too. All class.
I'm going to present Stoney for his award, the introduction.
I'm really honored.
Really cool.
It is. It's going to be a cool event. It is every year, the Ring Lardner ceremony last year.
Have you ever been to it?
Yeah, go every year.
I've never been.
It's terrific. It's great. It's great to see a lot of people. I wish I could go tonight because Fred Mitchell deserves all the credit.
Do I need to change or can I go like this?
There are a lot of sports writers there, but I think you might know how to change. You might want to put on your Sports Talk Live tie.
You got it. All right, 312-235-2525. Again, congrats to the great Steve Stone and to Fred Mitchell. 312-235-2525. Take a timeout. There was a third winner of one of the Ring Lardner Awards, and I can't remember who the third one was.
We'll find out during the break.
We'll find out. We'll give them their kudos as well. Eddie Olczyk and your calls next.
Olczyk got to it. Olczyk busting at center ice. Comes over the line. Shooting. He scores! Olczyk! A shorthanded goal! He just blew right through the defense at center. Coffey couldn't even catch him. Fired it by Fjord on the sixth side.
For all you young hockey players out there, this is Eddie Olczyk. Don't do what Cap's doing right now, but kidding aside, you're listening to Cap and Hawk.
Olczyk!
All right, welcome back. I'm Cap and Hawk. Great weekend of sports. I watched the fight. That was a little meh, but I did love the derby, and I thought Eddie Olczyk, as good as he is at hockey, he was equally as good on the NBC Derby coverage. I watched him Friday.
Did a great job.
First of all, he was giving out winners left and right.
Yeah.
So I texted him. I said, what's the next one? Because the first one, like a 20-1 shot, I didn't know it till the race was over. Guff texts me, Ryan McGuffey, dude, I just hit a 20-1 shot that Edzo gave out. I text him, he texts me back, play 3-8. So I play 3-8. Hits.
That's great.
Guy was on
I'm happy for you in that part. I was more impressed with the way he had command of the interview process.
And he was
just
awesome.
The way he handled himself as a reporter or in that context at the race, and it was impressive.
It was outstanding, and obviously Diana Olczyk went shopping for him because he looked good. Edzo, good morning. How are you, pal?
Hey, Eddie.
You guys are beautiful. You're right. The lovely and talented Diana Olczyk did just dress me, so to speak, before I packed for my 5-day trip to Louisville, and hopefully it looked good on the TV, and I appreciate the kind words you guys gave me. It's very nice of you. Thanks a lot.
How much fun did you have? Because it's in the middle of the hockey season, the playoffs are rolling, and this is your passion. I know that. But how much fun did you have?
Oh, it was great. I mean, it's something that, you know, I mean, Cap, we've talked about it a long time. And, you know, again, I mean, just to reiterate, I mean, this isn't something that just, you know, became an idea in the last year or two. I mean, you know, that's how I got my start in television. As I said on your guys' show a couple of months ago, I mean, I started in 94. You know, we had a work stoppage in the NHL, and I went over to the Meadowlands Racetrack in New Jersey, and they asked me if I'd be interested to come over and do what Jim Miller does over at Hawthorne every day, you know, and just analyze each race at the particular track. And I did that in New Jersey, and that's how I got my introduction to working with the crew and wearing the IFD, the thing you put in your ear so you can communicate with your producer and your director. So that's how it all started, and it's always been a passion of mine as a kid growing up here at Old Arlington. And so to get that opportunity on that stage, I mean, it was just an honor and a thrill. And, I mean, our crew, I think, did an amazing job of capturing really every different angle for people that were tuning in. And look, you know, the shows are different. The Friday show you mentioned, Cap, I mean, it's more to the hardcore horse racing fan, even earlier in the day on Saturday. But once you get to that 3 o'clock Chicago time on NBC on Channel 5, you're grabbing the attention of a lot of people that, you know, just watched the Kentucky Derby, and that's it. And I think that we hit a lot of different angles. And fun, that's an understatement. And I really, really enjoyed myself. And hopefully it came across well and passionate and go from there. So I'll be going to the Preakness in a couple of weeks in Baltimore. And but in between Saturday and that next Saturday in Baltimore, 2 weeks, got a lot of pucks to talk about, but it was a great experience, and just really honored and proud to be and have been there and worked on that stage.
You did a terrific job, Eddie, and I was impressed to see you back last night. Certainly didn't lose any of your stride getting back into the booth watching the Hawks. And when you watched that game last night, Cap and I were talking earlier, for the first 39 minutes or so, I think that it was a game that you know, was a kind of game that you appreciated. It was a hockey purist game. It wasn't a lot of skill on display, but there was a lot of effort, it was a gritty game. And I think that once Patrick Kane scored, then it's okay, that woke some people up. Overall, what do you think the Hawks did best last night to make Joe Quenneville think that it was their best performance of the postseason?
Well, I mean, I would say is how they really supported each other coming off the ice. David, you know, I had mentioned to you guys, I mean, to me, the team that would have the most success in this series would be the team that wins the area in the neutral zone, the area in between the two blue lines. And they really did a good job. I mean, their decision-making with pucks, their support, their strength in numbers through the middle of the ice. The guys were really moving. Puck was going straight ahead a lot of the night. I mean, you know, sometimes they get in trouble, and, you know, a lot of teams do, but you know, is when guys start trying to make those plays east-west, meaning going from, you know, board to board instead of going from end zone to end zone. You hear Joel say, you know, north-south. Well, that's straight-ahead hockey. I mean, that's what he likes, especially with his defensemen. But, I mean, their speed, they really did a good job. And, look, I've said this. I mean, Minnesota, to me, there's no team in the league that is better in the middle of the ice than the Minnesota Wild. And so far in this series, it's cost them. Because you think about the Blackhawks' first period the other night, how the Hawks were able to score a couple of goals by coming through the middle of the ice, you know, being able to make those type of plays. Their speed has been an issue for Minnesota to this point. And it happened again last night on a couple of opportunities and a goal for sure. But to me, it's the neutral zone that I take from last night, David, and go, wow, that's what this team can do. And it's just not because of the skill level. It's also because of the mental makeup and the smarts of this team to be able to know when to make plays and when to just, you know, old-fashioned meat and potatoes, just chip it in and go get it. And they certainly did that.
Ed, so what did you think of Corey Crawford? He made a save on Zach Parise that was grade A++.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he really wasn't challenged a lot last night. I mean, there wasn't a lot of those, you know, second chance opportunities. Like you talk about the one that Parise got in that second period. So, you know, look, I mean, he made some saves. He did what he needed to do. I mean, he gave up that soft goal there in the start of the third period, but he settled in. But I thought his team in front of him, performed very well and kept Minnesota to the outside for the most part. I mean, I made mention during the broadcast is that, I mean, Minnesota had some looks and whatever, but, I mean, they just never had the ability to get inside the faceoff dots. And we talk a lot about that over the years, that, you know, if you want to score, the puck's got to eventually get to the middle of the ice. And, I mean, the only time that I saw really a push or a surge from Minnesota is when Oduya tripped up Stewart and he went into the end boards dangerously. He left for, I don't know, 5-6 minutes. So it forced Mike Gill, the head coach of the Wild, to change up his lines. I thought they got a great burst of energy off of that. You know, different looks. I mean, you only got 11 forwards now, so you've got to start interchanging and giving different looks. I thought that actually is when they played their best hockey, was right after that injury to Stewart. And then they got the goal in the third period, and then he went back to the same lines, and Stewart, you know, came back in that second period. But I was a little bit surprised that he went back to the same line rotation, and then it just kind of went back to what it was, you know, earlier in that game. So I think all in all, look, a good game for Corey Crawford. Yeah, he'd like to have that one back. But for me, the Hawks' team defense was pretty salty last night.
Eddie, big picture question, NHL-related, because – you mentioned Crawford, and he took a puck to the goalie mask that really jarred him. And he switches goalie masks, and it's about 5-6 minutes left to go in the game.
Yeah.
He looked shaken. He looked dazed, and he looked a little confused, and he went right back in the crease. And I think afterward, Joe Quenneville sort of dismissed the idea, said he was fine, understand that. And I tweeted this, and I wrote this, and I believe it. If he were an NFL quarterback, I think he would have been – you know, still on the sidelines. I don't think he would have been able to re-enter the game. I think the concussion protocol in the NFL might be to the point where that would have been prevented. I don't know that to be true. That's just a speculative thing to say on my part. But what did you think about that sequence? And what do you think overall about the NHL's concussion protocol in-game?
Yeah, well, let me say this first. Like the NHL was the first league that became very proactive about this, David, way back in the mid-90s, where they were very, very aggressive on trying to figure out a protocol, not only before season, but have some information to go to during the season. And then, you know, things have changed here with, you know, with in-game and jolts and whatever. Look, I mean, I don't think I'm not in a position to say, but look, you know, you see violent hits, you see helmet to helmet to hits, the first thing that pops into your mind. But not necessarily when you see a body-on-body contact where it's the whiplash effect on a player when he snaps his head back. I mean, is there a possibility there of causing some, you know, some discomfort and the possibility of a concussion? Could it happen when a player takes a punch? Yeah, absolutely. Could it happen when a goaltender gets a puck to the face and he's stunned? I mean, that's the word that I used when Corey Crawford took that shot last night. He looked stunned to me. And again, I just saw what I did, and the first thing that came out is he looked like he was stunned. Now, I believe wholeheartedly in the staff, and when a player comes back and you know, sometimes you do just get a little bit dazed, and you know where you are, you know, the trainer will ask you questions, all those type of things. So, you know, look, I would not be able to tell you could that shot cause that, but he certainly looked stunned to me. But when he went over to the bench, there was communication over there from what I can see. And at the end of the day, as you guys know, I mean, when players talk to doctors and trainers and whoever, regardless if it's in-game, out-of-game, or whatever, there's a certain, certain tunnel vision that you're going to have as a player. So I would be the last guy to ask if there was anything wrong, but you got to take Joel's word for it. You got to take, you know, Corey's word for it. But yeah, I think you can get stunned, David. I mean, you played sports, you know, I mean, you can, you know, just get alarmed a little bit and, you know, you continue on. So I really like the way that the league is try to help the players have the protocols in place. But again, I mean, where is the line drawn? At the end of the day, I've always encouraged young athletes, hockey players in particular, that, hey, if you're not feeling well, you got to speak up. It's okay to speak up and let somebody know that you're not feeling well. And but like I said, Crawford bounced back, put on his old mask, and closed the door, and we're moving on to St. Paul tomorrow night.
Edzo is our guest, Eddie Olczyk, here on Cap and Hoff for a couple more minutes. All right, I've got a question for you. Kane and Tave scored in the same playoff game for the 11th time. Uh-huh. That's tied for third most among current teammates. Can you tell me who's at the top of the list? Current teammates.
This is all time?
No, current playing now, teammates.
Current teammates right now. There's two more. There's a duo, two more that have that more than that?
Yeah, and I want to know who number one is.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Okay, two current same game right now.
You got to think Crosby and Malkin.
Well, I was going to. That's the easiest thing to do. But
They're not number one.
I'm going to go. Would it be Datsyuk and Zetterberg?
Franzen and Zetterberg.
Okay, Franzen and Zetterberg. Okay, yeah, he had a couple of big years back-to-back. Okay, Franzen and Zetterberg, they're first?
They're first. They don't have number two listed, but I'm assuming it's Crosby and Malkin.
Okay, yeah, I don't know. But I figured, just with Detroit making the playoffs for, 1,000 straight years in a row, they would be the guys. Franzen and
Zetterberg.
Zetterberg, okay.
All right, what is your take on, away from the Hawks, the Tampa Bay Lightning just eviscerate Montreal in Montreal?
Cap, we talked about it. They just have their number, right? I thought Detroit was going to upset Tampa Bay. I really did. I thought Detroit could scheme enough defensively that they could beat Tampa. And they had Tampa on the ropes. They had them on the ropes. It's just, you let a team up off the mat and you see what happens. And look, Tampa beat Detroit without Steven Stamkos, who you could argue is as good as a goal scorer there is in the league, and he didn't have a goal in the whole series, and they won it. It's hard to do. It really is hard to do. Detroit missed opportunity. Tampa Bay took advantage of it. Now they've gone to Montreal and played two golden back-to-back road games. Now they're in the driver's seat. I don't think there's any doubt. Montreal looks stunned. They can't generate as much. Bishop's played well in goal. I'm not surprised that they're up in the series, Cap. I'm surprised that they've won both games on the road. I guess if that makes sense to you guys, but I kind of thought Tampa, the way they played against Montreal all season long, they just seemed to have their number, and they're in what a spot. They win the first two games on the road. Now they're going home for the next two. They're a pretty good team, Tampa. And by the way, Stamkos scored last night.
What a great move, too, Eddie.
Oh yeah, you know what, David? You mentioned it perfectly. A great move, but here's a guy that I said is as good as any goal scorer in the league. Hadn't scored in 8 playoff games, right? Because they went 7 with Detroit in game 1. He didn't snipe. He's on a breakaway. And in typical fashion, when you're struggling and, the puck starts rolling the whole way for him. And, you want a pitchfork. You want to just stick a fork in it and just settle it down. And it just happens that way. But he was able to control it. And Carey Price wasn't able to stop it. A beautiful move. So now Tampa's got their best goal scorer on the board, and that's certainly a positive for them.
Hey, appreciate you taking time as we let you go. By the way, Hawks 1-9 in game 3 on the road since Joel Quenneville's been the head coach.
Okay, so what are you telling me?
This thing, I'm listening.
The trend is your friend.
I got some friends text me, 2-0, we got this series. I'm like, relax. Yeah, slow the roll.
This is a lot. Yeah, this is, look, if you don't mind, let me just say this, is that, Minnesota, again, game 1 I watched from afar because I was in Louisville. And then, obviously, last night. So I see games differently when I'm watching on TV or when I'm in person. They've given the Blackhawks opportunities. And the Blackhawks, as champions do, when you open up the door for them, they're going to grab it. And they're walking right through. They're going to take advantage of that opportunity. So in these two games, Minnesota has been very giving. And the Hawks have taken advantage of it. You think that they would be sharper. It's going to be up for grabs tomorrow in St. Paul at the XL Energy Center. So they're going to have that emotion. So you expect them to be better. I've been surprised at how they have been so giving on the giveaways and getting beat on one-on-one situations. So things can change. We've seen confidence. It comes in a lot of different ways. And I would expect Minnesota to play their best game tomorrow night. And the Hawks are going to have to weather the storm the first, 5 or 10 minutes in there. It's two games. You got to get to 4. In order to do that, Capper, even you got to get to number 3 before that can happen.
No. Hey, Edzo, as we let you go, Kathleen Whippelberg just tweeted at you and at me a picture of you holding the Stanley Cup feeding a horse with some guy holding it with you.
Hold on here now. Thank you very much. Kathleen, you said Kathleen?
Kathleen Whippelberg.
Okay, yes, Kathleen, thank you very much. She must have got the tweet I sent out maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago of myself. And they say some guy. That some guy happened to win the Kentucky Derby back in 1994, Nick Zito. And that horse that you're mentioning – that was sticking his nose into the Stanley Cup was Gopher Gin, the horse that won the Stanley Cup in 1994. I'll say this, that's one of the best pictures that I have. I mean, the Stanley Cup trophy, and then you have a Kentucky Derby winner clashing and being together in a picture with the Stanley Cup is, for me, in my world, that's a pretty salty picture.
That picture is so amazingly good.
Yeah. Now, I don't know about the shirt or the shoes choice. A lot of people have told me on one.
Yeah, what kind of shoes are those?
Hold on a second. I saw you have those on last week, so don't sit there and try to tell me.
No.
Are those the ones that you had when those? I think I had your shoes. I had those shoes that I had in my house for like 4 months after you blew your knee out at our hockey camp. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I see he's wearing them around town.
So look at it. That's not just some horse or some guy. I mean, like, you know, just, you can tag it a little bit more friendly.
I didn't know.
Gopher Gin and Nick Zito, the trainer of, and that's the gentleman I actually interviewed.
That's who you interviewed on the walkover.
Yeah, on the walkover there for the Kentucky Derby.
Good stuff, Eddie.
Eddie, hey, thanks, David. Man.
We'll see you in St. Paul.
Okay, man. Hey, I love you guys. Thanks for having me on, and we'll talk to you if you guys need me for Wednesday post game three. Let's set it up, okay?
You got it. You're the best, okay, and congrats on the weekend. You were great.
Hey, take care. Very much. Appreciate
see
it. Thanks.
Bye-bye. There he is, Eddie Olczyk. And I retweeted that picture if you'd like to take a look at it. It's an unbelievable shot. Not everybody gets to feed the Kentucky Derby winner out of the Stanley Cup. It's pretty cool. 312-235-2525. We'll grab these calls. A lot more to do on the show. A Sports Talk Live tonight is at 5 o'clock on CSN. And then Cubs and Cardinals tonight, pregame 6:30 with Todd Hollinsworth and Chris Bowden. I will be off tonight to present Stoney with the Ring Lardner Award. Bob Elson is the other one who will be honored tonight
posthumously. Yes.
First pitch tonight is at 7, and then Bodie and Holly will have your post-game show. We'll take time out. 312-235-2525. Be right back.